You are listening to KBOO Portland. Please stay tuned for Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with Chris Andre and Tim Hermack from the Native Forest Council and a discussion on greenwashing.
Starvation is a creation of the devil, the rebel. I'm bringing food to the people like a widow, bringing flowers to a grave in the middle of the city. Isolation is a riddle, to be surrounded by a million other people, but feel alone like a tree in the desert, dried up like the skin of a lizard, but full of color like the spots of a leopard. Drum and bass for me, it'll
good morning, Cascadia. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. I'm in for Barbara Bernstein today. It's Wednesday, August 20th, 2009. I'm Chris Andre. My guest this morning is Tim Hermack with the Native Forest Council. We're going to do a different kind of a show today. We've got just about a full hour to take your reports direct from the field on instances of greenwashing that you, listeners out there, have observed or experienced. The number to call, I'm going to give it out right now, is 503-231-8187. This word green has now been applied in a Frank Luntzian insidious manner to all, to every variety of assault on our basic freedoms and our rights to clean air, clean water, the very earth that we walk on. Our own, our forests are threatened. I have lists and lists. I could go pages of instances of greenwashing, but just to get the ball rolling here, it seems that this word green, though, is almost becoming cursed because it has been applied to so many attempts to privatize everything. It's gotten a little bit odd. Frank Luntz's immortal words were, it's not what you say, it's what they hear. Frank's work was used to huge advantage by the Bush administration. Many people don't know that Frank Luntz is the amicus curiae behind many of these spurious ideas that ethanol was a good thing, we can continue to rape forests with no consequences, that we just have to call the air. We can continue to pollute the air that we breathe and call it Clear Skies Act or the Clean Water Act. Anything that you have experienced, that you've noticed out there, that you pull back the curtain a little bit, you just scratch the surface, and just below there is an attempt to privatize something. Look at bottled water. The way to make sure that water is for sale is to make certain that public water supplies are tainted, that you take away all kinds of restrictions on what can be dumped into waterways. You redefine what a waterway actually is, and then you open it up for industrial uses. That pollutes people's drinking water sources, so they're driven to buy bottled water. Bottled water is a huge industry now. All you have to do is take a look at the controversy over Fiji water, which is, of course, the number one imported water in the United States, and also a vast environmental nightmare and human rights crime. Think about it. When you buy those bottles, they're beautiful, too. I noticed the other day there are numerous... It's gorgeous. I don't know what they pay the designers, but they're raking it in. They're selling you a bill of goods. They're selling you a lie, just like when they told you ethanol was wonderful. That's another giveaway, of course, to Monsanto, Archer Daniels, Midland, Cargill, and the likes of these. We don't often make that connection, but it's underlying pretty much everything that we buy these days. Everything is heading in the direction of privatization. Tim, good morning. I'm so happy that you're able to be with us.
Why, good morning back.
Tim, of course, is with the Native Forest Council, has been working on this for a very long time. We've talked frequently about biomass, And the idea that by taking what they call, by redefining the forest floor as waste, renaming it waste. Waste, what is waste? Waste, something you throw away, right? So why don't we use it, we'll burn it, and we'll make energy out of it. Because after all, it's just waste, right? It's just lying there, virtually asking you to be turned into fuel. They had another one the other day. We've created these vast dead zones off our own coast, off our own Oregon coast. We've created dead zones. There's a huge dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. What are we going to do about it? We're going to make money. Here's how. Algae. There's tons and tons of algae there. There's no water. There's no fish. There's plenty of algae. So they're going to cart the algae inland. They're going to grow, feed it to fish, and then they're going to use fish oil as a power source. So, you see, we redefined dead zones. We can now call them fish fuel zones instead. That's how it works in every one of these instances. Waste in the forest, biofuels, biomass, the whole ethanol scam. These are all instances of greenwashing. If anyone would like to get in on the conversation or ask Tim a question, the number to call is 503-231-8187. We've got a caller on the line right now, Tim. Great. Mindy, good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Yes, this is a great topic that you're discussing. I wanted to say that I think one of the biggest hypes that we have going on right now is the rush to buy new hybrid cars, which it's great that we have finally something that gets more than 30 miles to the gallon. But I think in a time that we need to stop buying so much oil and stop extracting resources from the planet to build new cars and use the dirty technology to do that, which is what we're doing in China with the car manufacturing plants. They don't hold up to the environmental standards that our plants held up to. But what we can do here in Portland is to make mass transit a publicly owned and controlled utility, which every time you turn around, the TriNet Board of Directors is cutting the bus services, which are dependent for poor people and working poor that need to get across town, and it reduces the amount of vehicles that people need to get to work. And the board of directors is another agent controlling our destiny. And I think it's a problem that we can fix by demanding the Attorney General of the state of Oregon take the power out of the hands of Governor Kulongoski and make the board of directors an elected board, elected by us, we the people.
That use transportation. I like your ideas. Mindy. Why do you hate capitalism? What's the matter with you?
maybe because I'm suffering at the hands of it.
Don't believe the hype?
No, I don't. I'm suffering right now because I can't get a job in this capitalist system.
Tim, got any comments for the listener?
Well, she's absolutely correct. You know, our entire industrial culture is based on waste, fraud, and abuse, materialism, and consumerism. It's not that capitalism is evil. It's that capitalism in America has been transmogrified from something decent that operated in the public interest into something evil that now operates quite contrary to the public interest. Wall Street is made up of crooks. They squeeze your, not only your pocketbook, but they squeeze your lifeblood in order to make money, and they lie, cheat, and steal to do it.
And they paint it green, and now they're painting it green.
As Teddy Roosevelt said 100 years ago, they will find whatever lie works and take the last tree if you let them.
That's dead right. And again, who the fellow carrying the torch is for that is, of course, this Frank Luntz, who, if you trace all of this stuff back, it really does begin on Frank's little computer, where he tapped out these deadly, dangerous phrases that are outright stupefying lies. that people have bought because they've got the word green appended to it. What we've done here, let me give that number out again. So we want to bring lots of listeners in. We want you to join the conversation. We're talking about greenwashing this morning. If you've got an instance of greenwashing that you want to remark on, by all means, give us a shout at 503-231-8187. We've got Tim Hermack here with us with the Native Forest Council, who has watched this evolve over the years and tracked it very carefully and in very great detail. He's definitely the go-to person when it comes to greenwashing.
Chris, I would like to advise the listeners that there's some really good books out there for people to read that talk about the corporate takeover of America. One of them was Tom Hartman's Unequal Protection. He has two other books, What Would Jefferson Do? And I think the last one was called Threshold. He talks about the corporations taking power, and it's not just Frank Luntz. Frank Luntz is a macabre genius when it comes to PR. He knew how to simplify it and create the contract with America for Newt Gingrich. But there's Hill and Knowlton, there's Burson Marstetter, there's hundreds of PR firms. They don't work for you and I. They work for the big corporate interest, Wall Street, that has all the money. Procter & Gamble spends nearly $10 billion a year just in advertising. That's why we buy crappy bottled water.
And we've also managed to generate we've generated literally armies of pseudo-environmental groups carrying the torch for these same corporations. We've got to be very, very careful about the words that we read, looking for what they really mean, what they're actually hiding. We take it for granted. It's almost it's sort of a contract. It's a matter of trust.
Yeah.
So when we read a word, it means what it says. That is no longer the case. We're in very, very, very slippery slopes here. The thing that the Waxman-Markey so-called climate bill is a case in point. And anyone that cares to can get it online, have a read through. It is virtually a glossary of greenwashing. It's all there. If you want to know where I get many of these ideas, it's straight out of the climate bill. It's going to possibly... What do you think, Tim? More harm than good? It looks like it to me.
Anytime Congress, Democrat or Republican, passes a bill, they've made something worse while claiming to make something better. How does that happen? Even good politicians, who start out as good politicians, are soon corrupted by the influence of big money. There are 60 or 70 lobbyists permeating the halls of Congress for every single member. They lavish millions and millions of dollars every day on these politicians. And you think they're going to be responsive to the public interest, the common person, the little person? They respond to the big money. How could it be otherwise? John Stauber, in his book, Toxic Sludge is Good for You, he talks about how industry has created toxic sludge disposal by changing the name from toxic sludge to fertilizer.
Right.
And we put it on our garden.
Yeah. And then we eat it. We've got a caller. Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Thank
good
you.
Good morning.
I'm calling to make a comment. Greenwashing is a new term for me. I'm familiar with the concept. I just haven't heard the term. And I've been doing some of my own research, getting ready to start at PSU and major in environmental studies. One of the things that interests me was the definition of sustainability is largely contemporary.
It's another one of those terms. You're dead right, caller, and sustainability is a greenwash. Take a look around you. Do you really want to sustain this? I mean, look at I-84. We want to sustain that? No, we need to restore it.
Exactly. And the important thing is to remember that sustainability is not new. It's the whole country was founded upon sustainability practices. In fact, permaculture and horticulture was started in the colonial era, and
we didn't have any choice. We had no choice. We had to cooperate with nature. Nature would just kill us. That was it. You either learned to work with the natural world, or it worked with you.
Exactly. And so I think that the one of the points I wanted to make in the importance of recognizing or clarifying it for oneself, at least for me, was that hands-on environmentalism is largely the new movement of environmental conservationism, meaning what we can do ourselves to actively play a role in helping in whatever way we can. And I find that one of the things that clicked for me was when I learned as a young kid to pack out your trash when you're camping. And, you know, I didn't really pay any attention, but once I paid attention to it, that that concept of, you know, doing that really was able to carry over in all my all areas of my life, and that, you know, it just got me to thinking differently. I didn't even have to, you know, make any sacrifices or anything about it. It was just about where I'm putting my energy and how the resources in just my life alone, I've noticed, have been considerably reduced. The energy output, the efficiency I'm able to have my lifestyle with just my habits and knowing what is helpful.
You've done is integrated. You've taken that's a huge step for people to take, is going from intellectual awareness to actual physical awareness. When you've integrated awareness of our position in the natural world into the way one lives one's life, that's it. That's taking a huge step. It doesn't matter how much people talk about it. You can definitely talk a good fight. People do it all the time. But it's actually what you do. Larry Santoyo, great permaculturist, says it's not about your footprint, your carbon footprint, anymore. It's about your handprint. It's about what you're actually doing. And it sounds like you're actually doing it, Colin.
I totally agree. It's a sociological teamwork that is going to conserve our nation's resources rather than, you know, implementing, this and that. If we were able to have proper etiquette, then we would conserve our public services and our resources expenditure on cleaning up our mess, cleaning up after ourselves. It's just like having a tidy home, you know, and it works better when it's in balance. It's clean and in balance, and you can.
Well, that's absolutely true, and I know Tim has some comments on that. This is so typical of what we're seeing. What greenwashing really is when you have a situation, you take any situation. Let's take the dead zones off the coast. Okay. The problem is that we are pumping phosphates and who knows what else out into the oceans. We killed everything. There's no oxygen in the water. The water's warming. Everything's dead. The dead zone, right? So instead of stopping doing that, ceasing to be the cause of that, instead we go to industry. We're going for a biotechno fix because you know what? That makes money. Oh, this is what Naomi Klein's talking about, disaster capitalism. Every one of these, of the environmental disasters that we are confronted with today, all of those are a huge opportunity for somebody, somewhere, to make a giant bucket full of money off of all of these things by a biotechno fix. And you say, okay, we're going to do these fish farms, we're going to make this sustainable fuel, and we're going to call it green fish or something like that, right? And you got the word green in there, so that means it's sustainable. Oh, actually, the company that's doing this calls itself Sustainable. That's the name of the company. Sustainable Corporation or something. That's the actual name of it. They actually had go right ahead and call it that. It's a huge greenwash. Why not just stop dumping all that stuff in the Mississippi River that's heading straight down there, depositing it in the Gulf, altering permanently, and I do mean permanently, and it's going to get a lot worse because we're way, way past the tipping point. Permanently alter the character of the Gulf of Mexico. We don't know right now. It's a Pandora's box of horrors waiting to spring open. We are changing the way the currents of the ocean and the ocean and the sky are not separate. One doesn't end and another begin at the horizon line. It's all of a piece. You change the air, you change the oceans. You change the ocean, you change the air. And we're right there in the middle. We're right there on the edge. And guess what? Edge is where all change takes place. So, the Gulf of Mexico, case in point. Huge Pandora's box of horrors waiting to spring something on us that we've never encountered before. We think right now that it looks good from a point of view of profits, right? Wait till we face something that industry has got no answers for, and that's exactly what we're wading straight into, no pun intended, of course. Tim, please, I invite you back in.
Chris, that's where I think people have the power. We've got to take away the corporation's power of money. We have to take away corporations' rights to personhood so that they can prey on our children in harmful and destructive ways to make money. We have to de-link money and free speech. Currently, in my analysis, the crux of all the problems in America is when corporations got the rights of free speech and to own our political system. So the people of the state of Oregon, every single listener can write or call John Kroger, the state AG, and tell him to decharter these corporations if they lie to the people and hurt our kids, whether it's via tobacco or poison, chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, pollution, toxic waste.
That's another one. The herbicides and pesticides. You know, that's another one.
Yep, your first caller talked about hybrids. Hybrids, making the battery packs, is extremely a toxic, polluting process.
They should call them hybrids.
And in Europe, they have 60 different cars that get better than 60 miles to the gallon, and not one of them is a hybrid, and not one of those cars is sold here in this country. Why not?
Yeah.
Because we don't demand it, because PR firms tell us to buy a giant GM pickup, which is now going to be made in China, and then we're going to import it while we fire every American worker?
Yeah.
What the hell is going on in our country of cattle?
They completely co-opted the language. You're dead right about corporate free speech. Corporations do have free speech, and it's not against the law to lie. Politicians, corporations, anybody, you and I, anybody can lie. It's completely okay to do that. It's free. One of the first steps, though, is taking back the language, because greenwashing has got us where we are today. All you have to do is paint it green and sell it. And that's what they've been doing. The bottled water business, Fiji Water, look into that if you're not already aware of it. I want to just, well, there was another one on my list here is ethanol, of course, which I think most people by now realize is a giveaway to agribusiness, which again, in turn, is a giveaway to Monsanto, not to Daniels Midland.
And Weyerhaeuser.
And Weyerhaeuser.
Because they're planning to turn cellulosic biomass, forest trees, into ethanol also. So it's not green alternative energy. It's ripping out the lungs of the planet so dummies can keep wasting more electricity.
How do you figure, Tim, tell me how you figure they can possibly put this biomass thing over on people? The biggest hoax I've ever heard.
It's happening. Saturation advertising.
We've prevented grass seed farmers from burning their fields, which is the cleanest, best possible way of dealing with weeds and pests, and there's virtually no cost to it. You know, you drop a match, there it goes, up in smoke. It's a wonderful way of cleaning a field, getting rid of the weeds, and at the same time fertilizing it. But what happens if you tell farmers they can't burn their fields? Now they have to do what? Buy pesticides, buy herbicides, and buy fertilizers. Is that a greenwash? I think so. We've got so many different. Talk a little bit more about biomass.
Well, they're the lungs of the planet. If you actually had something that was being thrown away and you burned it in the fireplace for heat, well, there's some benefit, but there's a cost. In America, we don't count waste as a cost. We don't count the liquidation of nature, the destruction of a cathedral forest and creating a stump graveyard. We don't call that a reduction in the natural resource capital accounts. In America, we are crazy because ripping out our mother's lungs for a profit to us is counted as income to industry. but a cost to the family that lost their mother. But it doesn't get counted. That's why we do what we do. Industry, when Enron came to Portland, they gave environmental groups hundreds of thousands of dollars. And lo and behold, they dropped their opposition
to
Enron's takeover of PG.
And look what happened.
And look what happened. They did the same thing in California.
Wherever they touch down, it's the same pattern. And the reason that it's the same pattern every time is because it works. And it's because people are not aware they're being greenwashed. We've got another caller, though. Jenna, good morning. Thanks for joining us. Go ahead.
Greetings. Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I was just listening to you. I appreciate you for being willing to say what you say. You know, and that's really why I called, because I just lost a son recently in this last December, and life has changed for me in a lot of ways, and it already was before that. But with the environment, I came to Oregon to get my children in an environment where it's, you know, lovely and great, and I've fought to try and keep them here, and I've had people stop me from coming to such a environmental place, thinking that it's a fix, like I'm not going to survive here. And I've learned so much in the little bit of time I have lived in Eugene, and now I'm in Portland, about living off the grid, or just living based on your own intuition, your own instinct.
Do you live off the grid?
Not off the grid, but I have, like, with friends who live off the grid. Like, I've just learned from them so much, because I came from California where nothing is like that. Everybody's talking and nobody's walking. And the thing is I've learned that word is power, and we are creators, we are a life force, and there's no reason why we shouldn't have the power within ourselves to change what's going on in the world around us. With each person who changes the world around them, there's like 100 people around them.
So, caller, let me ask you a question. What are you doing right now, like as a hands-on activity, to not to sustain the mess we're in, but to restore it?
Well, what I'm doing is, as a young mother who's just learning this stuff, I'm taking the steps one by one to learn how to do it within my own house. How to recycle is just one of the first steps for somebody who doesn't know nothing, who hasn't really been exposed to all he can do. And the other thing is I'm helping where there isn't a need to be helped. It's the mentality that I have that I'm going to reach out and try to find different ways through the community. I just moved to Portland. I've only been here a month and a half. So I'm looking to be involved in community, in this community, on whatever it is that we need to do to save trees here. So I see there's like bald mountains everywhere. And I see, I've always loved nature, and I look at it like we're a bunch of kids on our mother's planet while she's away having a big old party. And I'm sitting here looking at everybody like, Mom's going to get mad. Y'all better leave. So I'm looking at it like I'm trying to teach people, young people, real young, like my children. That's what I'm doing. I'm trying to teach my children now the tools that we need to, the mentality tools that we need to have. More so than just, oh, I'm perfect at recycling. I'm perfect at being so natural. But I'm trying, and I'm learning, and I'm bringing them into that learning so that at a young age they already know that you should protect the environment. You shouldn't. You know, we don't pick flowers. We don't do stuff that shows the planet that we're in control. We're trying to control you and hold you in a jar and look at you for hours until you die. You know.
Thank you so much for that, Carla. So basically, what we're talking about is all about your handprint, not your foot, the carbon footprint. It's way too late to worry about that. Right now is the only thing before us is our own environment, wherever we are, whether you live in an apartment, whether you're in prison, whether you're in
exactly.
the military, no matter where you are on the planet, that's the environment. And
exactly.
if it needs to be restored, then one's job is absolutely dead clear, straight ahead, is to address the problem, hands on, doing
exactly.
something.
Exactly.
We've all already been the victims of, in some respects, our own hype. The green, you know, the word green has been
yeah.
turned around, co-opted, is used against us. Number to call for other callers who want to get in on this discussion this morning, or perhaps talk to Tim Hermag. This is a great opportunity. Tim's been a guest on Air Cascadia from time to time. Let me give you the number to call, 503-231-8187. We've got someone who is a grass seed farmer on the line this morning. Good morning. Good morning, caller. Thanks for joining us.
Is this me?
Yes.
I am not a grass seed farmer. I'm the sweetheart of the Valley from the Pie and the Sky Ranch in Corvallis. And field burning is no solution. You don't live down here, and you don't know how sick my kids have gotten when it's gone field burning. Why are we growing grass seed for people to plant lawns? People should be planting fruits, vegetables, doing their own gardens. We should be growing something else down here.
Absolutely.
Or have hemp to grow paper.
I don't know where you're getting your information about grass seed,
about burning grass seed, probably from the Oregonian. But no, definitely not.
I don't get anything.
They can do crop rotation. They're going to have to live without it. The air quality down here in the valley during that time is horrible. People get very sick. They get headaches.
Can I ask you a question? Would you rather, suppose we end grass seed farming, which I think is a very good idea, probably will end anyway, and we move to hemp or some other crop of that sort. Let me ask you a question. Would you rather have clouds of neurotoxins, which you can't smell, you don't know when they're spraying them, would you like to have clouds of neurotoxins?
You don't need to use pesticides. Come on, that's baloney.
In large fields, I'm an organic farmer. I have an organic farm. I have a permaculture farm. And
making a whole big organic farm down here.
Because the color...
And there's other
burning fields
stuff.
Are better. People, farmers have to control pests and weeds
on
large
ways.
Operations.
Well, there's a whole
there
bunch
are,
of other bioways to control pests.
There are indeed. But
Chris, I think the point that has to be made
is nobody has a right to make money.
Nobody has a right to make money by hurting somebody else.
This is true.
I mean, really, you can't, just one person's farming livelihood versus all the 50,000 people down here?
Well, I agree with you, and people shouldn't be made sick, but I have greater concerns about the use of herbicides, pesticides, and commercial fertilizers because the fertilizers are the reason why we have dead zones off the coast. The overuse of chemical fertilizers is killing the land, killing the air, and it's killing the oceans.
As well as the field burning. You can say no to all of the above.
I agree with you, caller. I agree with you, caller. I completely agree with you.
And if you're not going to ask for all of that on the left, then...
Are you doing that, though? Are you actually doing that? Are you fighting chemical companies? You're fighting like Monsanto?
Yes, of course I am.
Good. Then that's a hands-on thing to do. That's exactly what we're talking about this morning.
That's a cable translator down here, Chris.
That's exactly what we're talking about, is what you're actually doing to address it.
All my life. I was raised in the Owens Valley in California, where L.A. stole the water from to do their horrible thing that they've done down there. What good has it done?
Exactly. I have great suspicions when I see state law changed in a way that is a handoff to the chemical industry, to the likes of Archer Daniels Midland.
That is my objection.
That is my objection, is because they are a huge elephant.
You've been up in Portland.
I have, you're right. But I've lived in a lot of different places, I can tell you that. And when I see that name, I see Cargill, when I see Archer Daniels Midland.
Well, maybe that's what they're going to try and do, but we'll have that fight to deal with, too.
We fight it up here all the time.
They're going to try and do pesticides and herbicides instead of field burning. We'll have that fight to deal with here, and we'll deal with it. And I hope you help us.
We're on your side. Caller, don't get the idea that in any way I think that what you are doing is counterproductive or anything like that. I am 100% on your side.
I know what I'm doing.
We're completely on.
I can ride a bike up at 22% right now.
Good for you. We're on the same side.
I challenge the rest of you all that know me in Portland to do that too. Ride up my hill.
What's your name again, caller?
Thank you so much. We're very happy to have you call.
What's the name of your farm?
I gave you $50 a month. I hope you're happy to have me call.
What's the name of your farm?
What?
Your farm. The name.
I live at the Pie in the Sky Ranch.
Okay, got it. I thought I heard that at the beginning. Then I, in fact,
it's not a farm, it's a political organization or disorganization.
Thank you so much.
Ask Ronnie who I am. All right.
We know you. We know you. Yeah. And I want to ask other callers. Yes.
Come visit anytime. We're in Eugene.
Listeners, please feel free to call. It's 503-231-8187. Get in on the discussion. We're talking about greenwashing. Good morning, Gordon. Gordon's on the line. Welcome to KBOO Airwaves, Gordon.
Hi, good morning. So we run a nonprofit called the Center for Sustainable Today, and we do a cable show about sustainability. And last month we did a show about greenwashing, and oh my gosh, it's everywhere. It's so deep in all that we do, and it's really sad. And
it's embedded, isn't it? I mean, it's truly, they've managed to embed these hoaxes into the language.
Yeah, the corporations have co-opted and co-opted the word and co-opted the whole thing. And it's really hard to, you know, I heard you talking about the Monsanto thing, and it's really hard to fight Monsanto when they're running our country. You have Clarence Thomas, who's the actual lawyer for Monsanto, who's on the Supreme Court, and then you have Monsanto fighting these things about the herbicides and pesticides, where they came out, I think I read the article 2 weeks ago, where they said that the inert ingredients of Roundup is actually destroying 3 cells in our reproductive system of our human beings.
That is a neurotoxin.
So sterilizing us.
Yeah.
You know,
maybe
so
that's
what
good.
We need to do is we've got to go deeper than, we got to start doing things for ourselves and taking on little tasks and creating green spaces and educating our children at a young age is really what we need to do. We need to be an example for our neighbors that have no clue on what to do and how to do it. So, you know, take it upon yourself to talk to the mayor of a city or talk to the city commission and say, you know what, I've got an idea about doing a chemical-free zone. I've got an idea about creating a space where our children can go and be educated about how to be healthy and happy and you know, they're pretty positive about that, and they want to get on board, because if you can show them that you can save them money, then they'll let you do pretty much anything you want. So if you can show the city councils and the commissioners and the mayors that you can actually save the city money by going in a green direction, they'll actually jump on board and help you do it.
Gordon, that's a good example of what we're talking about here, where as one of the earlier callers, the fellow who's at PSU, was talking about hands-on actions that can be taken. We're long past the old monkey wrench gang paradigm, which I think in some ways is a terrible loss, because that definitely got change happening. That was far, far out on the edge, and it had its time, it had its place. We're really fighting a language war. It's a war of semantics right now, and it is so very easy to drive public opinion, to drive public discourse in the wrong direction by these deliberate misnomers. I want to talk about another term that I actually like, and that we have to be careful to define correctly, and we have to use it in order to stop at the very source, the cause of these problems, which will ultimately do us in. If we could, if we can assign to a tree, to a field, to a stream, an actual value, which people have termed natural capital, then there is incentive to preserve it. If a tree is worth more standing than it is on a truck ripping down I-84 at 85 miles an hour, then we'll save that tree. Wait, hang on a moment, Gordon, save that thought. I have to let listeners know you're listening to KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. Thanks so much for listening, and we've got other callers. Do stay tuned. We've got coming up at 9 on Political Perspectives, you'll ever hear an interview with Andrea Kono on grassroots organizing against hate in our communities, a report back from the Peace and Unity Fest, and the inspiring struggle of workers in the Caribbean. And at 10, it's their Cascadia commentary and news. You'll hear Flashpoint's investigative news with Dennis Bernstein at 10:15. It's a live report on the latest struggle from the resistance movement in Honduras. Also, taking a look at the expanding war in Afghanistan. They're probably going to bomb somebody else's wedding party this week, if I'm not wrong. And the involvement of high-level officials in the expanding drug trade. We'll take a look at a new book called Violent Gods, which examines Hindu nationalism in India and the impact particularly on women in Kashmir. At 11, if you like food, you love The Food Show. All this coming up on KBOO 90.7, your community radio station, Portland, Oregon. The number to call is 503-231-8187. Thanks for your remarks, Gordon. Mark, you're up next. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. I sharply differ with the last comment that was made about teaching our children. Because, I mean, that sounds good about teaching our children about environmental matters, but the time frame that that comment seems to suggest is that we actually have decades, that we have a comfortable window in which to groom a new generation to be more conscious about the planet. All I would ask people to consider is the opinions of the leading climate researchers, particularly Dr. James Hansen of NASA, the scientist who was censored by the Bush administration, would not have his findings reached the public because of Bush interference. Dr. Hansen is looking at the current situation, and his colleagues are looking at the current situation with climate change, with growing fear, with alarm, with a sense of panic that I'm not really hearing in this conversation. Every summer now, they've been watching the North Pole melt at rates that throw the previous modeling out the window, that all the expectations, all the extrapolations that were made 5 years ago are now seen as irrelevant, that this thing is really speeding up.
Yeah, we're way, way past the tipping point, and I think we are in a zone right now where in the words of Thomas Pynchon, we've gone transmarginal. We're in a zone where all of our traditional modeling logarithms are no longer applicable. There is no way that we can apply anything that we've ever encountered in the past to predicting what's going to happen. So we cannot in any way be prepared for it. We're sitting ducks, really.
Absolutely. Now, the one thing, I'm not saying this just to preach doom and gloom.
Preach it. Why not? It's a care program. Greenwash program.
There are those who watch this situation honestly and actually have a feeling that it is too late. I believe Lovelock,
James Hansen does say that we are in trouble of a sort that we are not equipped to get ourselves out of.
One thing I'd like people to focus on, because to me this is the only thing that's obviously within reach that we can focus on, is there is a conference in Copenhagen. It is happening in December. The Obama administration will be presenting a position there. Most likely it'll be like the position that Al Gore presented at Kyoto, which was absolutely the weakest position of all the industrialized nations at the table in terms of what are we willing to do to make a difference. In Kyoto, the United States was absolutely dragging the negotiations and holding back any real progress by offering the weakest proposal at the table. And remind you, this is the main polluting country, the country that bears the largest responsibility, that would be us, for climate change, is offering the weakest solution. Now, as you mentioned, what we've done is we've greenwashed things, but I would really like people to focus on Copenhagen, because it is a target. It is perhaps our last bite at the apple of having nations actually come together and have an international protocol where we could collectively come up with some sort of a remedy. If we miss that opportunity, then you can talk about teaching your children well. And the toddlers of today will become staunch environmental defenders 20 years down the road I'm sure.
But get him working on it now. Get him working on it now. I agree with you completely, caller. I think that one of the, again, in looking at greenwashing and how we got here, how we allowed ourselves to be duped and hypnotized by words that have been stripped of meaning and assigned new and inherently dangerous meanings. How this happened is, I believe, in my opinion, that the power brokers, not just the politicians, the people who really are the power brokers, decided that war was too dangerous. War is a great way to make money, but it's too dangerous. They did the cost, the actuaries did cost-benefit analysis and decided that war was not worth the trouble except in the interest of defending resources. So, instead, all of this stuff that is happening, the various environmental disasters that are unfolding right now, and the future ones destined to be much, much greater, and as we just said, much more unpredictable than anything we've ever seen before. The idea was that we would come up with these techno-bio fixes, and that we'd make a ton of money fixing the mess, not addressing the root cause of the mess. Not stopping the flow of stuff down the Mississippi River, but coming up with a techno fix to what to do with the stuff once it gets to the Gulf of Mexico and proceeds to wreak havoc. But what's happened, I think, is that as another caller did mention, and I believe that you've mentioned also, we don't have our predictors no longer work in this new world. We are decidedly transmarginal at this point. Go ahead, Tim. Sorry.
I wanted to agree with Mark. Times are desperate. I think within a very short time, we're all going to be shooting each other for food and water to protect our kids. Unless we address the real issues, and that's where the Democrats have shifted so far to the right, that's where our politicians no longer represent us. It's where Wilderness Society, Nature Conservancy, the Sierra Club, Audubon Society, National Wildlife Federation are all supporting increased logging, calling it thinning or forest health restoration. Our Northwest politicians and Democrats, Wu, Blumenauer, DeFazio, Wyden, they all support doubling or tripling the logging and brand new biomass, green alternative energy production, they call it. Sierra Club set up a partnership with Clorox. These are horrible things these organizations are doing, and we people go along with it because we perceive them as being our friends.
No, they have to be held accountable. There are hard questions that need to be answered, hard questions.
If I could just leave with one simple thought, is that we are in an emergency. We're in a crisis.
Yes.
The United States, as a culture, understands emergencies and crises. We have examples of this where business actually takes a back seat to the events of the moment. 9/11 is a good example. On that day in New York City, business was actually a secondary priority. Selling coffee at Starbucks in the vicinity of Ground Zero was of lesser importance than responding to the crisis, to the emergency. Emergency responders had priority. It was a paradigm shift, if you will. The other example that's used by climate change advocates that actually want to see some real change you can believe in, hope, and change you can believe in, perhaps, that paradigm usually is mentioned as World War II, that in basically on a dime, the entire United States industrial capacity shifted from making consumer goods for profit to making war materials, also for profit. But
Mark, call me if you get a chance.
Okay. But anyways, if we can actually look at this moment as a crisis and actually prioritize an emergency response,
we can
and let
do a
the
lot.
People that know most about this, which I would suggest would be the climate change scientists themselves, let them take the reins and say, this is what we have to do now. We have to stop, for example, and then I'll just leave one example. We're in Portland, Oregon. We have good water here. We are importing, with a large carbon footprint, water from all over the world. I can go to my natural food store and see friendly, smiling people shopping green, driving Priuses, buying water from Europe, buying water from Fiji. All of this comes here at a great cost.
And a huge amount of plastic, too. A huge amount of plastic. And the packaging on it, too, you see.
We are insane.
Oh, it's just, we would have no time for these shenanigans if we actually responded to this like it was an emergency. But we're in a state of denial. There's a cognitive disassociation. There's a disconnect. That is the environment we're in right now in Portland, Oregon. We're a green city in denial.
Mark, I couldn't possibly agree with you more on that. The trouble is that human beings aren't wired to respond to this kind of crisis.
Not when we're saturated with advertising that says we can be green and increase consumption.
Well, then that's the message, because on 9/11 people did respond.
Yes.
They did. That's what I'm talking about, though. That's the kind of crisis that we are hardwired to respond to. That's
well, this
the kind
is
of thing.
Than 9/11.
But it is. But the character.
This is the whole planet.
The character and the nature of it, though, is not is different from 9/11. 9/11 is a case in point, perfect example of the kind of crisis that human beings do really well at addressing. The climate change crisis is far, far more worse. But it's not of the character and the nature that we are, the old reptile brain, is wired to address. That's why we are, of course, yes, we are in denial. The people who are aware of it are in denial. And then there are all the vast, vast armies of people who aren't even aware of it enough to be in denial.
And another thing, Chris, we're all told that the things we know are solutions, whether it's single payer or stopping war or fair and just taxes or corporations aren't people or money isn't speech. All of the things we know are the solutions, we're told, are politically unrealistic. I'm afraid Copenhagen has already been sabotaged because carbon taxes aren't on the table. We're instead supporting some stupidity called cap and trade.
That's the biggest greenwash of all. That is, we're getting close to the top of the hour, and I'm so glad that you mentioned it. Cap and trade, of course, is the absolute, it's the king hell top of the list as far as greenwashing goes. It's really what this is all about. If you think about it, cap and trade, what that is exactly what it sounds like. It's a shell game. You just move things around. You have cups with a nut under it. Someone's moving it around really fast. You're supposed to try to remember which one of the cups the nut is under. It doesn't do anything at all. All it is we can buy our way out of responsibility. When this crisis does actually reach a point where it implodes on us, then we are going to be faced with that cap and trade is definitely not going to save us from ourselves. Not in any way, shape, or form. It's a shell game. It's a shell game. That's all it is. It's just exactly what it sounds like. Cap and trade, it's a shell game. Go ahead, Tim.
It's the same in every aspect. Until the people stand up and demand liberty and justice and honest politicians, we won't have them. As long as we buy products from evil corporations or corporations that are doing evil things to us, they will continue to do so. We have the power. We have to take action.
We need to get this cap and trade thing off the table in Copenhagen. I don't know. That would be a good place to start. We've got 5 minutes and we've got one more caller on the line. George, go ahead. You just got a couple of minutes.
Well, I'd like to talk about the state ownership of forests, particularly on the coast. We've had 30 or 40 years for the forest to grow back. I think the Department of Forestry had a forest plan. As soon as the thing comes up, it apparently it's just shelved. And what happens is somebody in the legislature one year wants to do one thing, another interest group wants to do something else with the forest. And we have a forestry school at the Oregon State. Does anybody know how we are really managing our own state
forests? Tim would know.
Yes, the new state board forestry chairman, he just got a an act passed or something passed through the state forestry board to double or triple clear cutting on the Clatsop and the Tillamook State Forest above and beyond the forest plan.
So we have no forest plan, basically.
No, we have a logging plan. That's what they're going to do, and to hell with Tillamook. They can flood it to Dickens, and they don't care. They want more logging.
Well, 3 months or next legislature, they'll change that and have it all for bikers.
No, it won't.
What, you don't know?
That'll be the day. Big money will make sure we don't save anything. Big money will make sure we keep stripping nature of its assets, so they can have more money, even though your kids won't survive the future they leave us.
Well, how do we get the legislature to get really a Department of Forestry that can actually manage a forest?
Yeah,
that we can't do, apparently.
Well, Weyerhaeuser funds the OSU Forestry School, Weyerhaeuser and Friends. That's why you don't get people talking about the natural resource capital values, and instead only see the utilitarian values. What good is my mother other than what I can sell her for?
I mean, that's nice and fancy and so forth, but how do we manage the forest?
I'm a conservative, and I'm a forester. We don't liquidate the forest. We can take a pint of blood every 2 months from an average adult male. That doesn't do us any good, but it doesn't hurt us. They've taken 2 or 3 quarts, and they want some more and have convinced some of us that that's okay.
And but how do we get the legislature to correct that?
Caller, hang on, hold that thought for just a moment. We are down to the very last moments of the program. Caller, thank you so much for your questions. To all of the callers this morning, thank you so much for your comments, your questions, your remarks. And I want to thank you for thinking about greenwashing, what it really is, what it means. Coming up on Mondays in September, Barbara Bernstein will be on starting September 14th at a new time, 10:15, right after Air Cascadia. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. I'm Chris Andre, and it is right now, it is coming up on 9 o'clock, so stay tuned for Political Perspective. Thanks, everybody. Thank you so much. My guest has been Tim Hermack of the Native Forest Council, an amazing, amazing person, tirelessly working on the issues that we've been talking about this morning. Thank you so very much, Tim, for joining us today. I'm Chris Andre. Thanks for listening. Dried up like the skin of a lizard, full of color like the spots of a leopard. Drum and bass pull me in like a shepherd. Scratch my itch like a needle on the record. Full of life like a mango on some mecca. Sky high like an eagle up soaring. I speak low but I'm like a lion roaring. Baritone like a Robeson recording. I'm giving thanks for being human every morning. Because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap. Tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again?